our first official full cruise. If we can get the next one. There we go. Next slide. All right, the original survey coverage, I'm going to first talk about the areas in which we fish. Original survey coverage was between Montauk, New York, east coast of Long Island, and Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, out to depths from as close to shore as was reasonable to be, which is about 20 feet, and originally out to the 90-foot depth contour, which was the limit of the what the center's surveys call their inshore strata. However, when it became clear that the Bigelow was going to be able to go into the 60-foot contour, the NEMAP board, which is the decision-making body for the work that we do, decided that it was feasible to only extend out to the 60-foot contour, and that enabled us to fish at a rate, sampling rate of about one station per every 30 square miles, which is a pretty decent sampling rate in comparison to other surveys, and within a reasonable budget and within a reasonable period of time for each survey. Next. Okay. Now, part of the funding package which ASMFC put together in order to fund full-scale surveys, which they did about a year or so ago, part of the funding came from the center as part of their cooperative research, cooperative fisheries research program. And the price that they wanted for contributing partial funding for the survey was to have us fish not only out to Montauk, but to also fill a bit of a sampling gap which existed in Block Island Sound and in Rhode Island Sound. And so we added stations in that area as well. Now, those waters, of course, are considerably deeper than the 60-foot depth contour that we cover in the rest of the survey area. And so there's two depth strata that we defined in there, 60 to 90 feet, which is relatively close to the shoreline, and then out to 120 foot of depth, which gets out to the areas where the center surveys generally cover fairly well. Next, please. So that covered our the spatial coverage of the survey, temporal coverage. Early on in that NEMAP process, which began, again, quite a few years ago, it was decided that, as with many other states and with the federal surveys, we should cover both spring and fall cruises. The timing of the funding package that was put together for 2007 did not allow for a spring 2007 survey. So our first official production survey occurred during the fall of 2007 between the dates that you see there on the slide. Now, the spring 2008 survey will begin hopefully next Monday, which is April 21st. And if you are aware of the timing of the center's spring surveys, you'll notice that there's a bit of a decoupling there. The center survey was out in the areas generally covered by NEMAP in the first two or three weeks of March, whereas we won't be out in those same areas until third week of April. There was a good bit of discussion about when the spring survey should occur. Reason being, and the logic that we ended up with the decision that we did, is that the inshore strata, historically from the center's surveys, have caught very few specimens of the species of primary interest. And so the decision had to be made, should we be out there at the same time as NIMS is, just so that we're sure that we're getting a synoptic look at the entire coast, or should we wait until and hopefully give the fish some time to move into the shallower waters and get some more meaningful data out of it. The deciding point, I think, came when someone at the center pointed out that even though they have historically fished in those areas in the springtime, that the data from those strata are very rarely used in any of the assessments. And so it didn't make much sense to us and to the NEMAP board, who ultimately made the decision, to be out there catching very few fish and collecting data that's not going to be used. And so we're going to go out next week. Starting next week, we'll have about a 3 or 4 week survey, and hopefully that will produce some meaningful data. Now, it's the first time that we'll be sampling in there at that point in time, so we'll see what happens. We have high hopes. Fall survey for 2008, if funding all comes together, will occur at about the same time as it did last year, and that is much more tightly coupled to the center's surveys because at that point in time, fish are heavily gathered inside this area, and so it's important to get that synoptic look over the course of the entire coast. Just very briefly about the net that we use. It's the net that was designed by the NEMAP, by the Trawl Advisory Panel that was put together several years ago, chaired by Captain Rule and several members here at the table and in the audience, I think, have been involved in that process. You've heard about this net before. It's virtually the same net that's being used on the Bigelow right now. The main difference between the two is that we're using the smaller 3-inch cookie sweep on the bottom. That's the black line that you see in the picture there. And the center, for the time being at least, is using the larger rockhopper rockhopper is the proper term, rockhopper gear, and that's they're doing that during their comparison work. I'm not going to say a lot about the gear at this point because you've seen it before. Slide. Doors, trawl doors that we use are the Tiburon Type 4s. We did have to make some modifications to those this year, and I'll speak about that momentarily. We monitor the net, as many surveys and many fishermen do these days, with sensors placed strategically at different places in the net to ultimately give us measurements of net width at the opening, net height at the head rope, and then we add a catch sensor as well to warn us when we might be exceeding our capacity to work up a tow. This gear not only gives us a sense of almost instantaneously of how the net is fishing on a moment-by-moment basis, but also at the end it enables us to calculate an area swept for each tow. So we get our GPS coordinates for the beginning and ending of the tow from the boat. We get our net width and height calculations from the sensors, and in the end we can calculate our indices on an area swept basis, which we think is a pretty good way of doing it. Go ahead. Now, this year we were able to afford to add door sensors to our suite of sensors, and that required us to make some modifications to the doors, and it just gives us another point of data to make sure that the net is fishing correctly. I will add as well that the Netmind company upgraded their gear from an older analog system to a newer digital system, and then digital system is what we were able to purchase this year to monitor our gear. And that provides, as well as all the data that is provided by the sensors you see here, that provides what they call symmetry readings as well, so that it tells you, again, on a moment-by-moment basis, updated about every 10 seconds or so, whether one leg is ahead of the other or behind the other. Now, in practice, it turned out that those readings were a little bit jumpy and a little bit erratic. But I was speaking to the Netmind folks at the Fish Expo just last week, and they gave us a way to record some of that data and send it to them, and they're going to analyze that for us and see if that can be corrected. Okay. The modifications that we had to make to the trawl doors in order to accommodate those door sensors are what you see in the red circles here. We had to build brackets, and actually those brackets were built by Captain Rule's son, Bobby, according to the factory specifications from the Netmind company. And little pockets, both on the front side and on the back side of the door, into which you slip the sensors. And those pockets, even though it's relatively small in comparison to the door, did cause a decrease in efficiency for how the net fished, and that had some data results that I'll show a little bit later on. This one I'm going to skip. Go ahead. I would just point out just a sort of interesting fun fact, or something that I find extremely interesting here. This technology in this trawl door is sort of so well developed that the door, this particular door, is fished now about 250 tows, and you can still see most of the blue paint on the bottom of that door because it's so finely tuned. It just fishes right along that metal knife edge that's the rusty part that you see there. And almost all of the wear occurs at that knife edge, and those are easily replaceable. So we have our spatial coverage, we have our temporal coverage, we have our gear, now, and we have our doors. Now we need a boat in order to accomplish this work. Well, we were fortunate enough to be able to partner up with Captain Rule and his fishing vessel, the Darana R, which is a 95-foot steel stern trawler, which is officially fished out of Wanchese, North Carolina, but which is actually housed most often in Hampton, Virginia, which is only about a half-hour drive down the road from Virginia. So that makes it very convenient for us to load up the boat at the beginning of the survey and unload the boat at the end of the survey. But there are a number of advantages that this boat and this crew offers. Captain Rule, of course, was one of the main people responsible for developing the fishing net that we're using, and so who better to know how to fish it, how to repair it, how to make it fish right, and how it's supposed to fish. Also, Captain Rule has experience with quite a few different scientific surveys, and so he understands the difference between fishing for himself and fishing in a scientific mode. So we're not at all out there just to maximize catch on every single tow. And so the whatever successes that we have been able to enjoy over the last couple of years are at least equally shared with the captain and crew of this vessel as they are with ourselves. As well as all of those advantages, just in terms of logistics, there's tremendous advantages that the Darana offers us. It has a very large working deck, as exhibited by this slide. Go ahead. And that's a similar picture taken from the other side of the boat when it's all set up for our work. I've got a series of arrows here to point out different things. Normally, the catch, when it comes up over the stern, we dump into a little holding area right there that is walled off. Go ahead. Larger catches can be dumped over on the side, as it was in the opening slide that you saw with that real big catch. After the catch is dumped, there's room there for us to have a culling table where we separate out all the different species and put them into our own little bins. We have, fairly hard to see over there, but several workup stations where we've got our computers and measuring boards and balances. Go ahead. And then there's a hatch cover to down into the fish hold where we have a wet lab facility set up. And that's our wet lab facility, not quite in scientific mode, but sort of in commercial fishing mode. But that's the same picture now in scientific mode. Evan there, which is the tall gentleman standing in the center, is about 6'4", so you can see that there's plenty of headroom in here. We're not cramped in at all. It's well lit. It's nice and bright in there for us. There's a tremendous amount of storage space for all of our gear as well as our wet lab, so this works out extremely well for us. Just a minute or two on budgets. How much does this survey cost us to run? Or how much do we spend of other people's money in order to run this survey? Total budget, I won't go through line by line here, but it's somewhere between about $850,000 and $900,000 per year to get this work completed. For that money, you get two cruises, 300 tows, something like 1.5 million fish sampled, 15 to 20 of relatively important species on which we will have decent data. Something on the order of 100,000 fish measured, something on the order of 8,000 to 10,000 fish aged, and 6,000 to 8,000 fish stomachs analyzed for diet content. Where the money has come from so far? Well, as I mentioned, ASMFC provided, to this point, has provided the lion's share of the money. In the first year, 2006, we worked on a budget of $250,000 to accomplish the pilot work. Going into the second year, almost exactly a year ago right now, ASMFC had a total available to contribute to the project of about $275,000, which was not enough to begin full production work. And so a year ago right now, everyone was in scramble mode trying to figure out what would be the best way to spend that $275,000, assuming that no other money would be available. The pilot work was done on sort of less than a shoestring, and so even though the $275,000 was somewhat more than that, it wasn't enough to conduct full-scale survey operations and start hiring people and buy all the equipment that's required. However, we were able to combine it with a year, with a third year of money from ASMFC, along with that extra money from the Cooperative Research Program that the Northeast Fishery Science Center was able to contribute. And so right now we're operating on the sort of third block of yellow cells that you see there. That money will take us through our spring survey and close to the fall survey, but does not cover our operations going into the fall. We do have very good potential for a couple of other funding sources. New York State has promised a good chunk of money coming to support the NEMAP program. Our understanding is that that's just caught up in administrative inertia for the time being, but that hopefully will come through by the time of fall. We also have a Mid-Atlantic Council Research Set-Aside Program grant for calendar year 2008, and that potentially could provide us with significant amounts of money. To date, nothing has been generated for that yet, but we do think that that will provide funding moving into the fall and possibly into next year as well. So we've been through all those areas so far that are blackened out very quickly, and of course, if anyone wants to ask questions either now or at the end, feel free to slow me down, and I'm happy to answer whatever questions. Now, the survey procedures, I was going to spend a little bit of time on here, but we'll move through those very quickly. Go ahead. And go ahead. Let's stop here for a minute. So, the area that we covered, from Montauk now up to about Cape Cod, the sampling rate of one station per every 30 square nautical miles ends up with a target number of stations of 150. The arithmetic works out nice numbers divisible by 10. Distributed, as you see, the little red dots, and I realize that they're hard to see, but we're going to zoom in on them in a minute here on the next slide or two. But you can see just from those distribution of red dots that we have pretty good coverage north to south, pretty good coverage in the limited inshore-offshore area that we cover. Go ahead. So our target for the fall 2007 survey was 150 stations, and in fact we were able to sample at 150 stations, and those are represented by the little black ants on that map. But now we'll zoom in on each of the areas a little bit better so that you can see where we were able to sample. Go ahead. And again, I suppose that's probably still a little bit hard to see. But wherever you see a red dot here, that's a place where where the computer told us that we were supposed to sample. Where you see a black dot superimposed on a red dot, that's a place where we sampled at the primary station. Where you see a red dot without a black dot, we were not able to sample that station because of either a bad bottom, surface traffic, fixed gear, or whatever other reason. Where you see a black dot standing by itself, that's where we conducted an alternate station. Now, I didn't go through the description of how we do our station selections, but it is a random process, and the alternate stations are selected randomly as well. Now, in the sounds, which is the area where we both have the worst or most difficult to fish bottom, and where we were the least knowledgeable and where it was okay to fish and where it wasn't, we were not as successful as in other areas in terms of fishing at our primary station. And I guess those numbers are hard to read. But in Rhode Island Sound, we fished at 10 of our 17 primary locations. Block Island Sound at 7 of the 9 stations we successfully fished at our primary location, and off of New York at 20 of 21 primary stations. I should say, and I absolutely have to say, that the areas in the sounds, we owe a huge debt of gratitude to Captain Chris Brown of the fishing vessel Granville Davis and to Captain Phil Rule of the fishing vessel Seabreeze for providing us with information on after we selected both our primary stations and our alternate stations. They told us which ones were absolutely unfishable, where good tows were within particular sampling cells that we had. And so we were able to escape out of those areas without any net damage, thanks to the efforts of those gentlemen. I should say, I suppose, full disclosure, that the practice of substituting alternate stations probably somewhat affects the randomness of the survey, but we think it's far better to successfully sample up and down the coast than to lose all of our gear before we start. And so we're willing to make that small statistical sacrifice, and I don't think that it's a significant sacrifice. Move down. Go ahead. As we move down the coast a little bit, we were far more successful in fishing at our primary sites. Up in New Jersey, we fished at 22 of the 24 primary stations. Delaware, 11 of 12. Maryland, 10 of 10. Virginia, 37 of 43. And North Carolina, 12 of 13 stations were at our primary locations. All right. Now I'm going to skip several slides here where I would have described what happens to the catch once we get it on board, but you're just going to have to take my word for it that we do extremely well at this. Go ahead. All right. Many of the species that come on board are... All species that come on board, at the very minimum, we take aggregate weights for the species and then measure all or a subsample of the specimens. For a list of species, and I apologize that that's hard to see here, but it should be in your handouts if you have it. For a list of species, the NEMAP committees have defined for us that we do further processing, and these are the mostly managed species, and we classify them as A's, B's, and C's from top to bottom. Now, if we have an A species that comes on board, we absolutely do some further processing, and I'm going to describe that processing here in just a minute. And then if we have time to move on to the B species, which is what it says there, great to have, we will do the further processing on those species. And then if time allows, we'll move on to our C species, which are those listed at the bottom. In practice, we end up doing all of these, the only exception really being that we tend not to do full processing on a lot of the ray species. We do skates, but we tend not to do rays, and that's simply a matter of time. If it was described to us that was a very important thing to do, then, of course, we might change our procedures. What that full processing or that further processing involves is that we take a subsample of 3 to 5 specimens in each size group of each species, and on those specimens we take individual length, individual whole weight, individual eviscerated weight, sex, which is determined simply by a macroscopic examination after we dissect, maturity stage. And then we remove otolith or whatever hard part is appropriate for that species, and we remove the stomach and take both of those samples back to the lab with us for processing later on. So all species are weighed and measured. The species that are listed in the priority list, which are the important managed species, have this more extensive processing completed. Now, why only 3 to 5 specimens at each station? Is that enough? Well, the reason that we've chosen that number, or those numbers, is that when we sample in this way, the individual sampling unit is not the fish, but rather it's the station. We're essentially sampling in a cluster. And the assumption is that specimens captured within a cluster are going to be more similar to one another than samples, than specimens taken 10 miles away at another cluster. And you don't gain a lot of information by taking the same data over and over and over again on a single cluster. And so it's worked out over time that depending on the species and how common the species is, we end up with more than adequate sample sizes by taking a relatively small number of specimens from a lot of different places as opposed to taking a lot of specimens from a few places. Go ahead. In all, we brought home about 5,150, or exactly 5,150 otoliths, and a slightly smaller number of stomachs than that. The reason that the number of stomachs is smaller is that we examine it in the field, and if it doesn't have any food in it, then there's no reason to bring it back. and those were divided in among the A's, B's, and C's species according to the numbers that you may be able to see there. About 3,600 A's, about 1,400 B's, and about 103 C's. And again, the reason that there are low numbers of C species is not because we don't do the work, but simply because those species tend not to be captured. And just for your information, since it's hard to read, the species that are most common in the A's are black sea bass, bluefish, butterfish, scup, silverhake, not too many striped bass because they hadn't started moving down the coast yet at the point where we were fishing, summer flounder, weakfish, and winter flounder. Primary B species, croakers, spot, and a variety of skate species. So far, we've worked up about 3,000 of those specimens, those are the ones with the little stars on the tops of the bars, and those are the sea bass, bluefish, scup, summer flounder, weakfish, and winter flounder, and I'll show the data for several of those here momentarily. Most invertebrates, we only note presence or absence. However, the invertebrates that are also managed species, we do a little bit more processing with those. Basically, we treat those as if they were our non-priority species, meaning that we take aggregate weights and lengths. But for a subsample of those of about five specimens per station, if there are five specimens per station, we take individual lengths, weights, and sex where that's easily determined. Now we're going to move on to our survey results. Go ahead. And the results section is going to be divided up into three or four different little subsections, first three of which will be very brief, and then finally we'll get into some hopefully meaningful catch and biological data summaries and still leave time for some questions at the end. I'm going to give you just a slide or two on how we spend our work days when we're out there. Just a slide on how the gear performs, and I'll give you a preview that it performs extremely well. A couple of slides just on our overall catch rates, how many fish we caught total, and a couple of fun facts involved there. And then we'll get into our biological catch data. So how we spend our days. Now, this figure, which is simply an Excel spreadsheet, each column represents an hour of the day, and I know I can't see it very well, so I assume most of you can't either, though I am getting pretty old, so who knows. Starting at midnight on the left and ending at midnight on the right, each row here in the spreadsheet represents a day during which we sampled in the fall of 2007. The green area represents the times during the day when the net was either in the water or we were in transit between stations. The little gray sections are times when we were either preparing to start fishing in the morning or working up catches at the end of the day. Over on the right is the number of stations which we sampled daily. And you'll notice that there were a couple of transit days and a couple of in-port days. I should say that, we averaged overall, if you look at only the days where the green constitutes the greater part of the day, we averaged about eight stations per day. And over the full 24 days in which we were at sea, we averaged about six stations per day. So fairly productive days. Now, the 2 days, about a week into the survey there, where it's mostly a white bar, and then a week or so later where it's mostly a white bar, we took partial days in Montauk, New York, and in Cape May, New Jersey, where we did crew changes, had partially replaced the scientific crew with fresh people. But we also, during each of those days, were able to arrange, and actually it was mostly Captain Rule that did the arranging, for some guests to come on board, local fishermen, some council members, interested people, where we saved the catches from the last tow or two that we accomplished during the day, and then they watched us work up the catch. The goal here was to do some outreach to let them see firsthand both what the net was catching in their local area and how the catch was worked up. And I have to say that those efforts paid off in spades as far as creating some good PR, and we plan to do a bit more of that, or we hope to do a bit more of it here on the spring cruise. Go ahead. Right. So how did the gear perform? Very well. This figure might need a little bit of explanation. The x-axis here along the bottom is a chronological listing of the toes that we accomplished. So the first toe is on the far left, the last toe is on the far right. And each of the squiggly lines that goes across represents one of the different parameters that we monitor of the net or, of, in one case, of the speed of the vessel. So if you look at the third line from the bottom where it says speed dash 3.2 knots, that purplish line represents the toe speed on each of the toes that we accomplished during the survey work. So we averaged over the course of the survey 3.2 knots. The dashed lines that surround the squiggly line represent the target speed that we were shooting for in each toe. And the target was about 3.1 to 3.3 knots. And so for the most part, we were able to stay inside the target range. You'll notice that on a few toes that the tide or whatever was pushing us outside the range. But if you look at the other lines, which of course I haven't quite explained yet, it didn't necessarily affect the net too tremendously when we were fishing a little bit slower or a little bit faster, and the specifications told us that we should. Now the other lines, starting from the bottom, the head rope height is monitored again by those sensors, and you can see that that was extremely consistent over the course of the survey and was within the target bounds, averaged 5.3 meters of head rope height. The wing spread is the bluish line, averaged 13.1 meters, which is right within the target parameters, and the green line up at the top, we were able to monitor our door spread, and that also was almost always within target parameters. Now, you'll notice both on the wing spread and on the door spread lines that in the first few toes, we were outside of specs, and that's because of that decrease in the efficiency of the doors that occurred due to adding those brackets. Well, we were able to notice that because of these sensors that are on the doors, and Captain Rule and the crew made stepwise modifications to the connection points on the doors and got us fishing back within parameters within about six or eight toes, and for the rest of the crews, everything was right on where it's supposed to be. So we're extremely pleased with this gear. These numbers all correspond extremely well to the work that we did a year prior to this in the pilot survey. The net fishes consistently not only toe-to-toe, but also from cruise to cruise. A couple of fun facts about our overall catch rates. We in total caught about 1.1 million specimens sampled, which is a total of 50,000 kilograms, all species combined. We saw about 130 species of fish and invertebrates. And in all, we measured about 73,500 individuals, which if you line them all up head to tail, measures about 7.1 miles of fish. Totally useless, but interesting fact. On the average, we caught about 7,000 fish per station, which translated to about 330 kilograms. Range is listed there between 75 and 150,000 fish, or between 7.5 kilograms and about 6,400 kilograms. At the average toe, we saw 20 different species, and the range was between 7 and 36. At each station, on average, we measured 490 individuals, and that ranged between 57 and 1,400. And on average, we worked up 34 specimens via that full workup process, and the range values were between 4 and 77. So on to some real data. I'm going to show you data for about three or four different species. The presentation does contain data for a lot of species, and so if there's one in which you're interested but I don't speak about and there's time at the end, all of the slides are there in the presentation at the end, and we can go through those. Or if you just want to do that on a one-on-one basis later on, I'm more than happy to stick around and we can talk about whatever species you wish to talk about. So explaining these two figures. Each of these shows all of the stations that we fished for the entire survey, where there's a little black dot, which may be difficult to see. It means that no specimens of that particular species was captured at that station. And then, of course, the increasing size of dots represents either increasing numbers on the left or increasing biomass on the right of specimens at each particular station. So if, and you're probably going to have a hard time seeing it, and again, I apologize, but if there are, for example, small dots on the left in terms of numbers, but at the same station there's a large dot on the right in terms of biomass, that means that there were relatively few large individuals caught, and you can do the math to figure out the reverse of that as well. Each of these figures is also annotated with the number of stations at which we captured the species. For black sea bass, we captured them at 55 out of the 150 stations. And that's just a simple arithmetic average of how many per station were captured. That's not, that should not be taken as an official index of abundance, because that would require a little bit more massaging of the data. But just to give you sort of a very generic idea of how many we're seeing at the stations. So we captured about 2.5 sea bass per station, range between 1 and 50, and of course it's actually between 0 and 50, but at the stations where we actually captured some is between 1 and 50, and about half a kilogram per station on average for the species. Now, this figure the first time through is also going to require a bit of explanation. The basic number that's being shown here is an odd thing called minimum trawlable abundance. Now, I mentioned to you that with the monitoring gear and with the GPS, we can easily calculate the area swept for each tow. Well, if we put the catch rate data on number or biomass of each species per area swept, so for example, we caught one per every square kilometer or something, and then expand that number up to our entire survey area, we come up with an estimate of the minimum number of specimens or the minimum biomass of that species that was present in our fairly limited survey area. So the number calculations for that are represented here in the red bars. Biomass calculations are represented in the blue bars. And the x-axis corresponds to the states at which we sampled. Now, state is not necessarily a very meaningful biological parameter to present these data, but it does show a decent north to south trend if such exists for any particular species. And it's also interesting, we thought, to fishery managers to present the data that way so that they can just get a general idea of how their state lines up in abundance compared to other states up and down the coast. I should also say that there are that the state boundaries which define our sampling regions are not perfect. There are a couple of boundaries, or a couple of our regions which perfectly straddle state boundaries, and so we just have to make the arbitrary choice as to which state those fish sort of get attributed to when we do the division this way. So these data should not be taken as gospel, but just to give you a general idea of north to south trends and state by state abundance. So these figures are annotated with our estimates of minimum trawlable number, and in this case that's about 1.5 million specimens. They're annotated with minimum trawlable biomass, in this case let's say about 300,000 kilograms, and then we present our some fairly crude variance estimates here as well. I should say that as we move into the future and as we get 3 or 4 or 5 years worth of these data, we will, of course, hopefully, if funding comes through and if everything stays consistent as we hope that it will, we'll start to establish time series where these data become far more meaningful than they are right now, which just represents a particular point in time, and at this point don't really probably add very much to your management abilities. I will also say that as we move into the future, we'll probably move away from these minimum trawlable abundance estimates as the reportable measure of abundance in our reports, and move towards a more traditional relative abundance index, just because these numbers are fairly difficult for a lot of individuals to wrap their heads around as to what they mean, and they could be easily sort of misinterpreted to say that there are at least 1.5 million of these individuals out there, someone could take that as an absolute measure of abundance and start running with it, and that's probably not the kind of thing that you want to have out there. So we may move away from these numbers a little bit, but that's a decision for us and for others to make. But the important point is here is that we hope to have a decent data string as we move somewhat into the future. This is length frequency distribution for black sea bass, annotated with the total number that we captured, which was 401 throughout the survey. And all of those individuals were measured, which means that this particular species was not subsampled at all. We brought home about 200 otoliths and 200 stomachs, and those have been analyzed, and I'll present those data here momentarily. Length frequency, you can probably make out two or three different year classes within here, and that will become apparent when I show the age distribution here in a slide or two. Now, the different kinds of data that I'll show here are samples of the data that come from surveys such as this, but by no means represent the universe of all the different kinds of analyses that can be done from our data set, and especially as we move towards more years' worth of data. But I wanted to show good examples of what we can do with just the limited amount of data that we have so far. Length-weight regression for this species, which is the figure in the upper left, shows that there's probably some sexual dimorphism in the way the males and females grow. Now, if you know anything about black sea bass, you probably know that they are known as protogynous hermaphrodites, which means that it's believed that the individuals are hatched as females, and then at some later point in time, they switch sex and become males. And if that were the absolute truth, then in the figure on the in both of these figures, actually, you would expect to see no young males, which are the red lines, and no old females, which would be the blue line. But you do see both of those. And so when we worked these data up and started seeing things like this, we started questioning ourselves as to how well we were doing in identifying the sex of the individuals out in the field. We didn't think that we were that stupid, but we never know. And so we did a little bit of literature search and found that that for this species in particular, that being protogynous hermaphrodites is not an absolute truth. They're what's known as incompletely metagonous, which means that not all individuals, that they're not all hatched as one particular sex, and not all individuals change sex. And so we do see small males and large females. So it made us feel a little bit better about ourselves. Now, the von Berlanffy curve that you see on the lower right here, first thing that you will probably notice is that it doesn't turn over and reach any sort of asymptotic growth. And that's telling us that we haven't captured enough large individuals in just this one survey to define good relationships. But hopefully as time goes by and as the sampling becomes more complete, that graph will get better. The age distribution for the species, you can see, is dominated by fish, zeros through threes. Zero is the bar that's on the far left, and threes are the last sort of large bar. And so you can see that we did not capture very many large individuals. I went ahead and calculated catch curve statistics, even based on this limited distribution, just to show that that calculation can be done. But for this species in particular, that's probably not a very meaningful analysis because of the fairly limited age distribution of the catches. The figure on the lower right shows sex ratios that we saw for this species. And in this particular case, the sex ratios are presented for each state individually. Again, those state boundaries are somewhat nebulous. But most of our specimens were females, not surprisingly, since most of them are hatched as females. And as you can see, as we moved down south, we tended to get more green, which is an unknown sex, or it was undefinable in the field. And that's because we tended to see smaller individuals in the south than we did in the north.
Chris? Sir. Right here. We're not even halfway through all the slides that you have.
Actually, we are, because I'm only going to do like three species or so. So,
do we need to do three? Can we do one?
Sure.
I'm not. Honestly, I'm very interested by this.
I told you to throw
shoe. We do have an hour set aside for this presentation. Yeah. I want to make sure that the council has an opportunity to ask you questions. Thank you.
All right. Go ahead. 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 I just, when you see one that has pictures of people, go ahead.
The council wants to see skates.
All right.
Why don't you do some skates?
All right. Clear nose or little? I have both. I have that, but that's at the end of the presentation. Let me move ahead to little. Okay. We caught little skates at 64 stations. Average overall of 35 per station. If we only count the stations at which we had a catch, since the geographic distribution was fairly limited, we averaged about 82 or 83 per station, range between 1 and 617. In terms of biomass, we averaged at those positive stations, we averaged about 47 kilograms and as much as 313 kilograms. Minimum trawlable abundance, of course, for the species is mostly in the northern latitudes. Length distribution is fairly limited. Length weight is there. I don't know what else you wanted to see out of this. Sex ratios seems to be something there. Not quite sure what. Keep on going. When you see one with a lot of pictures of people, you can stop. Go ahead. Back up one. I just want to acknowledge our tremendous staff, which includes integral to the whole process, includes the boat crew, as well as our staff. We're going to be losing a couple of these folks in the relatively near future, and we're going to have a very hard time replacing them with folks of equal ability. And I'm happy to, as I have data on a lot of different species, if anyone wants to see, and I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Council, any questions? Mike Leary.
In subsequent years, if you get the funding, are you going to make the same tows, or are they going to be random tows again?
Random tows for each cruise.
Okay.
Anyone else on the council? Nils?
The question is, will the data be available on the web? Yes, our report has been submitted. I don't think that ASMFC has it up on their website yet. If anyone wants an electronic copy, just give me an email address. It's a large file, but I'm happy to send it along. The web address is nemap.org. The website is difficult to navigate, and it's fairly limited. I apologize for that. It's not our website. It would be better if it was. But be that as it may, the reports will be there. The data will be there.
Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to, first I'd like to say it's very gratifying to see the performance of this gear. After the effort that the panel has put into developing it, to see the actual performance of it is, I find really gratifying. I really take my hat off to the NEMAP people that are involved in this and getting it done. And I have very high hopes for this survey going forward. But what I found really interesting, just because of today's discussions last night, as I looked through the presentation or book that I got from Chris there, is the consistency of the catch rates. Like if you take one species skates right across until you geographically ran out of them, you basically had a geographic run of them. And you did, you know, it was pretty obvious in the three different skates that they have there to just see that just because of the skate option. And like I mentioned to you before, John, I kind of went to compare that to the automotive trawls, automotive spring survey, but the resource document doesn't show skates of any of them. So it just, I think it'd be very helpful in the future if the resource survey document had skates in it.
So, back to the council. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, Chris, just because I can't see in the thing we got here, could you put up the winter skates, the weighted length regressions?
I'm hoping that I can see it better on the. Yeah, winter. They're our problem child of the last 5 hours. Winter skate. Okay, the weighted length regressions by sex. Okay. And that gives us the age. No ages on, that's what I can't read the. Is yep, the one here that gives us the age? I'm looking for the age distribution.
We have the vertebrae, but we have not analyzed them yet.
Okay. So all we have is length and weight distributions. We don't have age.
I apologize for that. It just hasn't been our priority. We concentrated on a lot of the fin fish.
Okay, no, that's fine. I couldn't read the X and Y axis in the little chat here, so I wasn't sure what I was looking at. Thanks.
Anyone else on the council? All set. Thank you, Chris, and we look forward to getting updates from time to time as you guys progress. Thanks.
Thank you all very much.
Okay. Unless there's anything further to bring before the council under the council agenda of today, the meeting will be adjourned until tomorrow morning at 8:30. Monkfish Committee members, please stay behind. We're going to go right into a Monkfish Committee meeting. For those of you that aren't here or don't want to stay for the Monkfish Committee meeting, please leave the room quickly so that we can conduct our business and so that we can get out. Thank you.
While people are shuffling around, members of the public who are here for the Monkfish Committee meeting, I have a sign-up sheet.